make a decision to be the best. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Your work reflects you, so protect your reputation. Don't ever give up. HVAC. Tactical. It's a mindset.
What up, what up? HVAC Tactical Podcast. I have a special guest in the house tonight, John Escoval, who is an Army veteran, student of the HVAC 2.0 program.
What?
And lover of the trade.
Lover, man. I can't say enough. I live, eat, breathe, and sleep HVAC.
Welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thanks, man. It's been a pleasure. I couldn't wait to get on this table right here.
So what's new, man?
So, man, it's been a change in the industry, keeping up with the change. I always like to call it the pivot in HVAC for us small business guys. And currently learning the new direction with HVAC 2.0. You know what? It's time to stop giving away free estimates. Starting to get paid for our consultation and knowledge. So learning that pivot has been a little hard, but it's paid off a lot.
So I've been down this road for a long time in this so-called pivot, right? Where should I start charging for estimates? And I have friends all over the country because I travel and do a lot of training, and they tell me most of them don't charge for estimates, which is kind of the industry standard.
Yeah.
But there's quite a few of them that do. And my first thing is like, well, what do you charge? And what's the reaction of the homeowner? You know, how do they handle that? Do they tell you to get bent and kick rocks and pound sand? Or are they welcoming you in with open arms, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a good thing. If you just fumble across it, of course, they're going to straighten their backbone and they're going to look at you crazy. But I always think it comes at that initial phone call. If you slow it down, and what I like to say is it's a Sandler tactic. It's called draw some pain. Why were you there? And if you can understand what they're really wanting, you can ask questions that draw pain. Now, if it draws pain, then you can say, well, understanding you're having these issues, it's going to be a little bit more than just coming in and replacing something like for like. Would you like me to come and actually test your house or test your system to see what's really going on and really understand your problems?
But isn't that really the industry standard, though, is like just to change out like for like?
Oh, yeah.
It's totally the way it is, right? And before we get too far down this road, I kind of want to rewind a little bit, and I want listeners to be able to really hear your story, hear who you are, where you're from, how you even got into the trade. So start from the beginning, man.
All right. So Army veteran, 19 Delta. Wow, to my guys out there. Now, when I got out the Army, I thought I was going to become a cop or a prison guard. And my grandmother always said, I don't know if you're going to like that route. Turned out didn't work too well. Luckily, I got out of it. It was a scam. Did the Texas Workforce Commission, came out with $20,000 from the Army. Spent that in a weekend. And then no money, and what am I going to do? Had a family member that was in the HVAC trade and said, hey, cuz, can you handle the heat? And I said, I sure can. So I went to good old Capital City Trade and Technical School.
Where's that out of?
That's out of Austin, Texas.
Okay.
It was either you're a veteran or someone from prison.
Is that still here?
No. It's a long story. You should look it up.
But that's why I haven't heard of it. Okay.
It wasn't a good ending. But they showed me, I had some phenomenal teachers there that allowed me to grasp technical skills. And that paved the way for me to go to a national company, and I did a lot of quick service work where do startups real quick, and the motto was, hey, we'll give you 10 startups, and how fast can you get through all of them? And I think a lot of us have been through that trade in the beginning where we just kind of didn't really care and just really blazed through these houses in new construction where, you know, if they wasn't filled up with nitrogen enough, could have been the other guy. Keep on rolling. Once I became really good and technical and can able to hold my own and hold a truck and somebody else in a truck, I tried to get that good old raise, and I got held back. Didn't work well with that company, so I decided to have a little bit of words. And we ended up hiring me as a subcontractor to work for them. So now I became learning installation, how to install systems. And once I started becoming good at that and combining it with technical skills, I was able to subcontract for multiple companies with my old mentor. Now, after 3-4 years of running as an installer and a tech for other companies, I ended up shooting for my license. Very wet behind the ears still. Didn't know what I was doing. I got lucky. I was just smart where I can retain information. Loved the trade. And my mentor now became my employee. And oof, that didn't work too well. So we parted ways, and here I was, a little fish swimming in a big pond in Austin, Texas. I joined Home Warranties. Worst place to do.
Yeah, oh, man. Don't even get me started on that, dude.
So I don't know, guys, how y'all feel about Home Warranties, but I thought I had a method to the madness. You know, when someone throws me a hard ball, I always try to find some way to keep the responsibility. It's hard for me to shift responsibility, guys. And I think when you really love this craft, you learn how not to shift it, to also think outside the box of how to come up with a solution. Well, after a good old 7-8 years dealing with Home Warranties, I just got kind of run down, guys. I was just a little tired doing the same thing. Feel like I was a glorified property management technician, run and gun. You can get it done as fast as you can. You might make some money. And then you start realizing in the trade how people take advantage of our craft. Investors, they just wanted to, they buy a property. Hey, it's not working. Doesn't cool well. Guess what? Put a half ton bigger. You know, once I started really fumbling around with this, I'm like, there's got to be a better way. How can I look out for different mentors out there when I'm a small fish swimming in this big pond? Started dealing with new construction, and that was also a different kind of nightmare. Now, these all made money, guys. You know, it just made money where it felt like I would see it there, but then it would be eaten up, you know, later on down the road from warranty calls of customer didn't like their bedroom. It was maybe too hot, too cold. And what does us AC guys do? We run over there and, you know, check superheat, subcooling, check some airflow. And we really didn't know why this was happening. And I wanted to know why. Why was I having these problems? Once I started fumbling around, and luckily, I don't know how I rolled around in this, and I still became great. I still didn't pass responsibility, but knowing why was just bothering me so much. So I first went off and joined, looked for classes, and we started with Nate. Nate was kind of a hard class to deal with. You know, it was dealing with things with
boards. I failed it the first time I took it.
It was a, hey, I passed with a low score. You know, hey, a doctor's a doctor, even though he passed, right?
That's right.
You know, so I learned there, and I said, woo. It lit some fire under my butt, but I saw the mentor there that was teaching, and I asked him, hey, man, can I come under your wing, follow around for free? I'll work, do whatever you want, but, guys, the main thing that I was searching for was knowledge. I wasn't really getting paid. You know, I knew with knowledge that I can get success, and once I went under and I started learning more, he said, hey, man, you should really learn some more tips from NCI, National Comfort Institute.
Most guys don't even know what that is.
Take a breath. You know, once I went there, that changed my world up. Jim Davis out of there changed my world up with combustion analysis and performance. Understanding static pressure, guys. Oh, airflow is clean. Airflow is king. You cannot even diagnose a system properly if the airflow is not right. Superheat's off, subcooling's off, pressures are off.
Well, and what a lot of guys don't realize that every time you change your airflow, you got to adjust your charge.
Yeah, you know, and it's little things like that that I notice you can't be blazing through these things no more. It ain't how fast can I get a startup? how fast can I get home? It's, you know, hey, slow down, understand the system, understand the airflow. Once you understand that, now you could put your puzzle pieces together. And they opened me up. And guys, when you take this education, it switches you up, especially if you were just a technician running a gun in, your hot shot of getting systems back up. This will change you. Next thing you know, you're trying to drill testing ports in every single system you have and talking to people about blood pressure and airflow. And these customers' eyes glaze over, you know, and that kind of.
Keep it simple, man.
It was, yep. You know, and you get all this knowledge and it's like, boom. Well, fumbling around some more, I had an issue with a client that had hot and cold bedrooms, and I could not understand why it was that. The manual J said 100 CFMs in that room. We had 102. I couldn't figure out why. Lo and behold, here comes that sneaky little guy called air leakage, and he also taught me a horrible lesson. The horrible lesson where I ended up paying for a new unit and increasing the ductwork. So I was like, what is this? What is this mystery? Why am I learning about air leakage now in a home? Then I stepped into Building Performance Institute. That is another organization that teaches about air leakage, building analysis, duct leakage. And I decided to learn that craft and understand BPI wasn't an actual class that you can bullcrap around. You know, you had to study.
Yep.
You know, and I started understanding, hey, the house is a system. A lot of us HVAC guys, we don't think that. We stay in our lane. But guess what? Our trade, our what we do, involves the whole house. And I started realizing at that moment that I need to step back and look at the whole picture.
You know, when I first went and, I was born and raised in this trade. And when I thought, you know, what is there that I don't know about this trade, right? The young, dumb kind of mentality in this business, right? I went to go do my NATE test. And I was like, oh, dude, easy, 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 right? I started hammering these questions out. And I was like, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is, you know?
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about NATE is it's similar to the concept of college where you have to learn a bunch of stuff that you'll never use again. But it's on the test, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, dude, I don't even know what half of this stuff is, you know? And I left the test and I talked to my dad and I was like, I don't even know what that was. And he's like, he started laughing. He goes, they haven't used those since like the 80s, you know? And it was one of those things where I got my score back and it was like, dude, I freaking didn't just not pass it. Like I bombed it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And in my defense, I really didn't study because I was like, dude, how hard can this test be? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was that young, dumb attitude, that ego of, you know, hey, dude, I know everything there is to know, right? That everything I preach against now is the reason I preach against it is because I used to be that guy.
Exactly.
And a lot of people don't understand that. And I've made a lot of dumb mistakes, you know, a lot of expensive mistakes. And I thought the NATE test was hard. I finally passed the NATE test, and then I went to take BPI test, and holy crap,
yes. That
was a whole nother level, you know? And I remember thinking I was set through this class for like a week, right, before we take the test. And it was all hands-on, running blower doors, going to like this house and testing gas analysis and all this other stuff. And I was like, how am I going to retain all this in a week? How am I going to pass a test this hard in a week? You know, but you're saturating yourself 8 hours a day, 5 days in this class. And it was intense, man.
Yeah. How do you hold all that information with the shot glass, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I just say to anybody who wants to be better at their craft, man, you got to step out of your comfort zone and you got to put your ego and your pride aside and realize, dude, you don't know nothing, you know?
Yes.
If you think you know something, you don't know nothing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know quite a bit about a lot of stuff, but, dude, I still don't know nothing,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm still learning every day, and that's kind of the whole premise
mm-hmm.
of HVAC Tactical, right? It's just to, dude, keep learning, keep trying to be the best that you can be.
That is definitely and why I really feel that. And then the brand definitely does, you know, be the best, push your craft. And it's definitely going to show we're very important out there, guys. And I really feel that our trade needs to be recognized a lot more to put up in front with all the other trades. Because hey, if your light goes out, guess what? You can handle a day without a light. If that bedroom is hot, if your house is hot, they're calling you.
It's hard to sleep.
You know, there is none, and they're going to be mad at you, and somehow it's your fault. If you can't fix that uncomfortable bedroom, it's your fault. Even though if it wasn't your fault, it's still your fault.
That's all right.
You know? So anybody listening that kind of heard the very first part of this, we mentioned HVAC 2.0. So what is HVAC 2.0? Because until you mentioned it to me, you know, a couple months back, I really never even heard of it. And then I started looking at what it was, and I thought, okay, I know what that is, and I've definitely studied some of that, but I'm definitely not, like, head, you know, diving in head deep into HVAC 2.0. I would like to, but it's a whole different avenue of the HVAC game. It's not just changing boxes.
It ain't changing boxes. You know, it's a lot more of really understanding what your client wants. It's slowing down. It's not about changing that box. It's not about getting the cheapest price either. It's really understanding what your client wants to buy, not what you're trying to sell. So I'll kind of go in on what drove me there. All this wrongness I was doing before, and then I started learning. I joined, you know, programs that give rebates, and I started questioning in my head, like, hey, I'm doing these blower doors and duct leakage up front and testing, and I realized no one's doing that. We always test at the end, and that was just mind-blowing to me. I thought I was great at what I was doing, testing, and then I was like, well, the standard's testing at the end. And really, if you're testing at the end, you don't know where you start from, and you're just basically lost. Guys, that just basically ends up poor reviews, poor performance. Even if you got the system great, you still don't understand what they're comfortable was with the number or what they're uncomfortable was with the number. So I started wondering why. Why is this happening? And I started searching, reaching out there, Facebook, who are these people? And I fell across HVAC 2.0. And when I first started following, I sorted pictures of my jobs, and they would give me some likes, but also they gave me a good kick in the butt too. You know, when you start studying and you start rolling on jobs, you start climbing this little ladder, you start climbing this hill, and you think you're really good, you know, hot shot. And then there's going to be a group of guys that come, and they're going to kick that ladder from
under. That good old ego sneaks up on you, huh?
And they kick that ladder down. I fell all the way down, and I really didn't understand why my blower door was getting dust. I didn't use that tool, right? I didn't understand looking through that lens. I was so caught up on the AC that I didn't really understand the house. So when I started understanding that, they said, hey, man, before we even start teaching you this stuff, you have to understand how to talk different, how to talk to a customer. Because how many free estimates do you give a year? And I was like,
too many.
All of them. I was like, that's how you do business. You know, you go in there and they're
part
like,
of the game.
What is it? Yeah.
It's part of the game.
And he goes, oh man. And you know, it's a process, guys. It's hard to get your whole company to do. It was easier for me to come smaller and I can change. I can do a lot of pivot. And you know, when you go into a China shop, you got to break some China, you know, especially if you're bulling around. So really when I started understanding the Sandler principles, where it's understanding what the client wants, understanding their needs, and then before you do the dog and pony show and do all this stuff, hey, do they have a budget? And then when I understand that one little thing to ask a client, do they have a budget, their backbone is going to get real straight real fast. And either do you know right away that's going to tell you, are they kicking rocks? Are they just shopping around? Is their decision today or next year? You know, it's also going to let you know, what does the house need? Is a good old HVAC system going to do it? Or really, does it need ductwork?
So, in my experience, when you ask somebody if they have a budget, this just happened to be like 2 weeks ago. This little old lady, I asked her, do you have a budget in mind? She says, well, yeah. And I said, well, would you mind sharing that with me? And she's like, no.
Nice. That's very typical, guys.
And I said, why? And she said, well, because, you know, if I give you the budget, then you'll max it out. And I said, well, isn't that what a budget is for, is to not go over that amount, you know? And I just said, you know, the reason that I ask you for a budget, and I said, I try to say this as respectfully as I can, but if you were remodeling your kitchen, the guy came in and asked you what your budget was, you would give him a number. If you were remodeling your bathroom or laying new flooring down or new cabinets or something like that, you would give them the number. I said, but why is it that you never want to give the HVAC guy your budget? You know? I said, here's the most expensive, most used, most abused appliance in your entire home. Mm-hmm. And you just want to slap it together with duct tape and Pookie and hope that it does what it's supposed to do. Right.
Please work, right?
And, when I broke it down for her, she finally was like, okay, well, I have a budget of, you know, $7,500. I said, okay, well, it's not a terrible budget, you know, but it's definitely, I can't do anything for $3,500. So, but if you give a realistic budget, you can pretty much get something that's going to work in any realistic budget, you know, and if you have good bones already in the structure, you know, like decent ductwork that maybe just needs to be sealed up a little bit. Then you can get somebody into that entry-level system. Now, when you start talking about overhauling an entire, you know, comfort system and looking at the home as an entire system, I mean, you're talking big dollars, you know?
It is. It is. And going back, like, with HVAC 2.0, even if I do get a $3,500 budget, guys, I mean, this stuff happens, okay? There's people that actually have problems, but sometimes you got to give them a little monkey paw. You got to give them a little something. Home performance is expensive, yes. It can get way up there, 80 Gs, really, really fast, you know, compared to an air conditioning system, which can get up to 20,000 very fast, you know. The thing is, when you have someone with an unrealistic budget, what I like to do and what my mentors taught me in HVAC 2.0 is give them something to tire them out, you know. Give them, hey, if they got humidity problems and they got $3,500, guess what, guys? There's something called a portable DU, $200 to $400. Put it in your area and empty it out 5 times a day. When you get tired of that, then you could come and spend $5,000 with the whole house DU.
Yep.
You know, all kinds of ways to help them. And going back a little bit, I think a good thing was about free estimates. And what really changed the game for me understanding free estimates. A lot of us take our intakes through phone calls and you get someone, hey, how much does this unit cost? You know, the main thing that I always try to do is ask, well, why you ask that question? You just don't take this time out your day and just start shopping for ACs. A lot of times they're going to let you know what's going on. And I try to say, hey, well, we can do one or two things for you. One, we can do a 30-minute visit like everyone else does. And then I can give you a bid like for like. Now, if it's something that requires plans or all that, we need to see those plans. We need to make a bid off of those plans. The more comfortable you are with saying that, the better it's going to be, because other than that, everybody else is just going to say, oh, it's 3,000 square feet, 10 duct hits, 4-ton unit, 3-ton unit. That's going to be 20,000. Nobody's going to be with how detailed you are with plans so you can compare apples to apples. So I always ask that. What are your specifications? If they can't give me that, well, we need a plan. And guess what? We charge for that. If they don't want to do like for like on a free estimate, I always ask them, well, would you like to do a paid consultation? Now, you got to get, when you offer something free, everybody's going to take it free. And a lot of times, free stuff ends up more expensive than what it would have cost for something you pay for. When we're at our consultation, a client's more engaged. They're allowing us to, they're going to be there, they're going to listen to you, and if you ask the right questions, they're going to tell you what's wrong. They're going to let you test their home to understand what the house needs. With the HVAC 2.0 process, when I find out their goals, their home needs, and lastly, their budget, if they share, I can give them odds of success, which ends up selling better equipment. So, for example, if they have humidity issues, $6,500 budget, I might sell a DHU instead of a single-stage unit if their unit is still operational. You know, I would have more better odds of success that way. Then I can give them an offer and decline and let them make their decision. So this takes a lot of pressure off of us when we give a consultation, so so they can pick and choose what they want to buy.
So that makes a lot of sense because you're saying, hey, look, your AC is still functioning. Yeah, it's 15 years old, but, you know, sealing up a little bit of ductwork, adding a little bit of refrigerant, maybe, you know, topping off that subcool superheat, and then adding a standalone dehu integrated into that system is going to get better performance than just swapping the box, leaving the leaky ductwork. And let's face it, most guys who are just swapping boxes really aren't dialing in superheat subcool anyway.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, we're just guessing at it. And a lot of it is when you start traveling down the road, if you're not testing, you're guessing at it, guys. And we do it. I did it so much. And I'm working my way to, one, get paid for it at our consultations. So I know if I do a blower door, I know if I grab a manual J, I know if I get their energy usage, I can be pretty on the nose of the load calculation and what they need.
So charging for estimates is something that there's going to be, I would venture to say pretty confidently that there's very few people in the industry that actually do that. Number one, you got to be super confident in what you're doing, right? Yes. You got to be super knowledgeable because you're essentially giving them a service before you even do any work, right? And I feel like it's really a gamble, right? Because you're like, well, okay, how many jobs am I willing to let go prior to me going, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to go back to doing free estimates, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess you really got to determine, you know, who it is you want to be in the industry. And, you know, you're going to try to just follow the trend of how this has kind of always been, or you kind of want to buck the system, so to speak, right? And be different. And I'm a fan of being different.
Yeah.
And I've made my entire business model different, you know, mm-hmm. on purpose. I do what other people don't. And I think that's partly what's made us successful, you know, as successful as we have been. But the same thing with, you know, the brand, right?
Yeah.
I want to be different. I want to be different kind of brand. You know, I want to kind of be genuine. I want to be in touch with the people who are loving the brand, you know, and having that genuine feel and that passion for what you're doing definitely comes across to the other end of the audience, especially if you're charging for an estimate, right?
Oh yeah,
man, that customer,
$300 to $600 every time we do it,
and that customer better be feeling that passion, right? Or like, what the heck am I paying for?
Well, it's funny because it's what I've really found out with our clients that we have, they really want to just be listened to, you know. And a lot of the thing when we go through the consultations, you understand, guys, my tail wags. It just, when I hear something, I'm ta-ta-ta-ta. But learning this process is shut up, let them talk. It's not the time to be all about product knowledge and tell them everything that's going to fix their whole problems. It's time to listen, not spill all the candy on the floor.
Sure.
Because a lot of times what we've seen out there, they pick up that candy and use that candy for the next contractor. And we do this all the time. We give unpaid consulting all the time.
Yep. I mean, we're guilty of it too, you know, but I think, you know, what helps us separate from the rest of the pack in the sales process is that we take the time to educate, mm-hmm. right? And when customers say, well, the last guy never said this, or I can call somebody's, you know, crap before they even say anything about it, I'd be like, mm-hmm. yeah, we don't base equipment size on square footage. We do manual J heat loads. And what that means is I give a brief explanation and I say, you've mentioned to me that you've already gotten two or three estimates. How many of those guys asked you how many square feet your house was? And they just give me this blank stare and they go, all of them.
All of them.
And I say, well, why do you think that they would ask you something like that? And they mm-hmm. go, because they're planning on using square footage per ton. And I said, exactly. Right. So right then and there, without even trying, I've pretty much discredited everybody else who came in the door before me. Right.
Yes.
And using little tips and tricks like that is great. But man, you better follow through and actually do that heat load calc, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you better follow through and do exactly what you said you're going to do and have some integrity on the backside of all that.
And there's a lot of different software out there, guys. Like, we're not talking about a full-blown load calculation. We're talking about block load. And there's a lot of CoolCal, EDS. There's a lot of things you can use. Now, this is how I always rate load calculations and doing them all the way. I always say, guys, if you're doing, you're going out there and looking at the equipment, that's the worst way to actually get a load calculation. Second worst way is square footage. Third worst way is just a manual J. Remember, the manual J is saying perfect conditions, perfect insulation, perfect air sealing, perfect ductwork. you know, so we don't have that in the world. And that shook my world up with HVAC 2.0. It means, hey, manual J is just like, you know, fairy dust. It just exists depending on how good you do. Now, after that is the manual J and blower door. That lets you know two things, because your blower door, the air leakage in a home can sway your manual J almost a ton in heat or in cool. So you could be a ton off. You could be a ton oversized. If we're building tight and you're oversized, guess what, boys? It's where that biological growth, that moistness comes. That unit's not shutting off. I mean, the unit's not running long enough to pull out that moisture. It's got to run at least 15 minutes to start dehumidifying. You know, and then lastly, if you get that energy usage and baseline it, you can actually see what they're doing. You have the blower door manual J and actually see what they're producing out. That is the best way to understand what that house is doing.
Now, is this website here, is that the 2.0?
Yep, HVAC2.0.com.
Well, it says 2.0.com, so if you try to put an extra dot in there, I think you're going to get misled.
Yes.
But the website's HVAC20.com, and those are the numbers 20. So HVAC20.com, HVAC20.com. When I started kind of thumbing through some of this stuff, some of the analogies that were thrown around, like there was this, I think they did a HVAC 101. There was a paper written, HVAC 101, that said, like, if you drive a car that's like newer than 1988, it already has an intelligent air conditioning system in
crazy,
it.
Crazy, right? Yeah, Nate Adams.
With reheat and everything else, right?
All that.
So it's like, why would you want your air conditioner in your home to be less intelligent than the air conditioner in your car?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the old clunker.
So it's kind of one of those things where when I gave that paper to actually a couple of people on the mm-hmm. team, and it was like, they see the light bulbs just go off.
Boom.
You know, and it was like, I never really thought of it like that. And when I started seeing that reaction, I started using that with homeowners.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And they were just like, I never thought of it like that, you mm-hmm. know? And so it's just interesting when you can kind of read or find a new concept or a new way to explain things and really throw it down. Just the light bulb goes off for people, right? Yeah. What I've learned in this business is simplicity is key.
Mm-hmm.
In the sales process, man, keep it simple.
Yes.
You know, the old method, right? Keep it simple, stupid, the KISS method.
Yep.
But buying an air conditioner is already hard enough. It's already stressful enough, right?
Yes.
The anxiety is already there. Oh my gosh, I got to spend $10,000, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, how about we try to alleviate as much of that pain as possible? Let's simplify this entire process where the hardest thing you're going to have to do is write me a check and then go write me a review,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Other than that, I'm going to take care of everything, your registration of the equipment, right? The installation, the permitting, all this other stuff. So we've gotten to a point now where we've got everything pretty much dialed in for do the consultation, do the installation, have another person in our company go back, technician, to verify airflow, refrigerant charge, static pressure, gas pressure. It's just that third set of eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the city inspection guy comes around, and then we close out the deal. But when it's all said and done, you know, just having that extra added layer of, yes, it costs money to send a technician back to the job, right?
Oh, yeah.
But what does it look like to the homeowner?
They love it. You know, the main thing is taking care of that baby. And going back to the HVAC 101, when I joined the group and they gave me HVAC 101, Home Comfort 101, I sold more two-stage and inverter systems by leading with that chapter than I ever had. Because, first of all, I didn't have to go and start explaining all this technical stuff or trying to keep it simple, maybe too simple. I didn't know how to sell it up front. And this was able, when we got to the job site, we sat at the table, they already wanted a two-stage. They already knew. So a lot of that has helped out tremendously with prepping up front with the emails. I always have my clients prepped before I get there so they know what to expect. So if they're calling up like, hey, I want to see an AC, well, you'll get an email that says here's path A, free estimate, like for like, or path B, and I break that down. I send HVAC 101, and they usually say, yes, I want the $400 consultation, or no, I want the free estimate. That right away lets me know, are they a suspect or a prospect? Because suspects really don't need my time, you know, because they're going to kick some rocks around, cheapest guy. But if you're a prospect, I can be able to spend my time on you, and those are the people that I want to focus on. because none of them are our clients until they actually write the check, right?
100%.
You know, and they'll use you up real quick.
So, I mean, it sounds like, though, you've jumped over that hurdle of really where most guys in the business need to decide who it is they want to be in this business, mm-hmm. right? And the crazy thing about this business is that you can pretty much, I mean, there's so many avenues, right? You can be a specialty, just like doctors, right? Mm-hmm. You have kid doctors, you have, you know, surgical doctors, you have eye doctors, foot doctors, you know, all this, these specialty doctors. Well, our trade is very similar. You can be a specialty in anything, right? And so ultimately you have to decide in this business who it is you want to be. And I ran another business in another state for several years, and I didn't make money. You know what I mean? In mm-hmm. fact, I lost a lot of money, and it cost me a lot of money. Even after I got rid of the business, it still cost me a lot of money. So when it's all said and done, you know, you have to decide who it is you want to be. You know, do you want to be somebody who's just kind of mediocre and just going with the motion and just, hey, look, this is just what I know. This is what I do. And I'm just going to keep doing the same thing till I die, which is kind of the mindset of a lot of guys in the trade.
It is.
Or you can decide, hey, I truly want to be great at what I do. I want to master my craft, you know, and you may or may not get recognized for that.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Ben with HVAC Tactical. If you're looking for some gear to represent what you do so passionately for a living, then check us out at HVACtactical.com. That's HVACtactical.com. And be sure to hit us up on Instagram and tag us in all your photos. Back to the show.
You know, hey, we're watching. You know, we're getting ready to hand out some CAP awards and try to award guys and recognize guys who are doing great things in the trade. Not necessarily revolving around just selling boxes, right?
That's definitely what I like about this trade that you have, and you really recognize the crafts. And I think that's very big. We need to go back, like you said, away from selling boxes and really pushing our craft.
So we have a lot of people to blame for this, right? We have, mm-hmm. number one, we have ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. We have chosen to not value who we are in this trade, which ultimately turns around and allows a homeowner to not value who we are, right? Which is why they go, well, what do you mean you don't do free estimates, right? Well, the last guy didn't charge me for this, you know? I can't believe you're going to charge me a service call or whatever, you know? Uh-huh. But then you also have to blame, you have to blame the manufacturers, because the manufacturers are now in this game of sell as many boxes as you can. Sell as many, and you have your territory manager. Hey, we're going to spiff you once you hit your goal. And, you know, so, dude, they don't give two craps about that. In fact, most of those guys don't even know crap about HVAC until mm-hmm. they came in as a sales guy, you know? And so when you look at, you know, the way that the industry is run is it's all about boxes, right? It's planned obsolescence, where back in the day, dude, you get a train unit that would run for 30 years or an old ream unit that would run for 30 years.
They don't run like that no more.
Nah, dude, the units you buy today are not the units you bought 20 years ago. That's
dehumidify less and they don't last as long.
Yeah. So when you really start to look at, you know, what systems are capable of doing, buying a high-end system is great, but if you don't really attack the other parts of the system that make that system so great, then you're really better off buying a lesser system and fixing all the other stuff, right? I.e. ductwork, indoor air quality, dehumidification, building performance, stuff like that.
Yeah, and that really helps out when you have your budget, guys, you know, if you're able to get that, you know, because if you have a budget, either you're going to waste it on to some inverter equipment, some high performance, or you might go two stage in a dehu, or you might do something totally different that you didn't even think you were going to do. So now when you have that, your mind can expand to understand what is really the problem.
Yep.
You know, it's not just fixing the box. It might be, hey, it's maybe too wet in the house. Maybe it's too dusty. Maybe they got asthma allergies. Sometimes it ain't just throwing in a Remy. You know, it's really understanding what's going on with the actual home.
The source of the problem. The
source of the problem. Yep.
You won't believe how many. Well, I'm sure you've seen the pictures as we post on Instagram. You know, the return bucket's not sealed.
Oh, yeah.
The white insulation is all black all the way around the box. Nice. You know, it's like, oh, that's not supposed to be like that?
Or like, no, I don't have any dust issues, sir. Mm-mm, yeah. Not at all. The house is perfect. Yeah. Oh, you like breathing your attic?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes it a lot easier for me.
Yeah. You know? The insulation around your return box says otherwise.
Or the worst is like, oh, yeah, I don't need to. When I tell them, yeah, we're going to take it from a 4 to a 2.5, you just see their face like, what? Or even if you want to get more risky, you're a 2 if you really seal up the house. And they just don't understand. And then when we find out how leaky it is to the attic, how the system ductwork so leaky or the return air is so undersized, it's sucking air from somewhere, it lets us really know, like, hey, the only reason your system is working because it's so messed up.
That's right. You know? Yeah, man, it's just good stuff. There's just so much to learn in this trade, man, and so many guys who have no clue of what's going on, and so many guys who do have a clue of what's going on and don't want to share it with anybody else, you know. And everything I've learned in this business is because I took the time to go educate myself and took the time to ask a bunch of questions, and I wasn't too proud to ask those questions. But a lot of guys are just, they're afraid to ask simple questions like, How do you calculate superheat and subcool? Like, how, you know? Because most guys just hook up the stuff and it just does it automatically, right?
Exactly.
And back in the day, we didn't have that luxury. We had to calculate all that stuff. And now I'm spoiled as can be. I just hook up a set of hoseless gauges. It's done, right? But yeah, I think it's important to know how that stuff works. Not that you have to manually punch that calculation all the time.
Yes.
But I think it's a good idea to know how it works.
I agree. And a lot more of us need to be more open about it. Because you know what, guys? You know, we're a dying trade, I always say. There's a lot more of us retiring, us getting out, than people that are coming in. And we need to share this knowledge to become stronger. Because it takes a group of us to do it right instead of us fighting for the cheapest price.
Yep.
You know, and me myself till this day, I'm crawling out of that bucket of going. That's why sometimes free estimates, sometimes it's not even worth the time, guys, going out there, driving to the job site just to say you're the cheapest. You know, and a lot of other times, hey, it works out great. You just got to understand your suspects. And you got to understand prospects. I really think so.
Yeah, and it's good, man. Like I said, you know, you figured out who it is you want to be, you know, and I personally have a hard time making that change because in as a business guy, I stop and I go, well, yes, my time is worth money, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also as a business guy, I say, well, I don't want to let that opportunity pass me because I know if you put me at the table with somebody else or against somebody else, dude, I'm gonna make you have a run for your money. You know what I mean? And I'm confident enough in my sales game that I can take that job as a free, quote unquote, free consultation and, you know, have a good chance of turning it into something, right? As opposed to me just going, oh, you don't want to pay me to show up? Sorry, I'm not going to show up, right? And then I'm like, man, that could have been like a $12,000, $15,000, $20,000 job I just lost, right?
Well, we don't want to do that.
Right.
So it's a lot more of just I think it's really when you're bringing inside the sales process, you know, you're asking them to share, you're feeling the comfort, making them feel good so you can understand who that client is, that suspect is. Now, once you have them, we always send that email that gives them the choice. So we offer this services. Now, if they decline it, that's on them. So when we go to the estimate, hey, did you read HVAC 101? Mm-mm. So that should already let us know that this job is probably going to be cheapest price. And I try to work my way out of it to get out of that because if I stay on cheapest price, that is not going
to
get me the job.
So let's back up for a second. So it sounded to me like you just said that you send HVAC 101, the little pamphlet, to your homeowners before you even arrive.
Every single one. And a pre-email that they helped me write to give them a choice to pick. And also with the group, we have a PDF that says, hey, path A. And this is, we give them a survey. Do you have asthma or allergies? And they can rank it 1 to 10. Do you have hot or uncomfortable bedrooms? Do you have humidity issues? Do you have biological growth, et cetera? It's usually 5 questions, and they can answer them. Now, that total score will let them know, do we recommend a free estimate? And a lot of clients do get free estimates, you know? Or is it going to be something while they're really calling, hey, I got an uncomfortable bedroom. Well, that like-for-like equipment's not covering an uncomfortable bedroom.
Right.
Okay. But they pick it. That's the main thing.
I guess it alleviates responsibility, right?
It shifts it to when, well, you got to, so I used that word earlier. I don't like shifting responsibility, but I want my clients to accept responsibility with me. Remember, guys, they're also the operator. They're choosing this stuff. And if they choose something wrong, we're there to help them understand their problems through science so they can make a more informed decisions on what they pick. If they pick a single stage system and they got humidity issues, we offered all this. We learned how to offer this by talking and asking questions.
So they have to accept responsibility for making a poor decision.
Every single one.
Because all based on they were just too cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it really helps understand the process. Guys, if we get cut short, if you do enter my name, John Esquivel, in Austin, Texas. You should be able to get the program for free. Okay, that's for free. And it's $25 to download. They have a whole script for you where you can enter in all the information, and it will actually be a program that spits out data. And it shows the manual J, the tonnage, and it really helps out with your selling.
Well, we still got some time, but be sure definitely to check out John on Instagram.
Yes.
At Austin Star Services. That's at Instagram.
Yep.
He's got a lot of great content rolling out of there, doing a lot of VRV type stuff, VRF, a lot of York stuff.
That stuff's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. So there's just a lot of technology that we have today that's available as to what we didn't have. You know, growing up in this business, dude, we didn't have no inverter driven stuff back then, except for mini splits, you know, which back in the day, nobody ever wanted because America wasn't ready to accept mini splits back then,
right.
You know?
Right, definitely.
But no, it's just, as science changes, our trade changes, technology changes, and we have to be able to change and adapt with that. And if you're doing the same thing today that you've been doing for 30 years, you're missing the boat, man. Totally missing the boat.
Yeah, I wasted 10 years. Well, not wasted. I learned some bumps on the way. But, you know, again, the pivot, guys, it's just if everybody's doing the same thing, you know, maybe it's time to do some a little different so you can get that drive and energy back.
Yeah. You know? Well, and two, you know, if you're working for somebody else, you may not have that opportunity.
True.
Right?
True.
Because those people might be stuck in their ways.
True.
But if you're working for yourself and you want to separate yourself from the rest of the pack, this is definitely the route that you may want to start looking at and just striving to be different while everybody else is focusing on changing the box like they have been for the last 20, 30, 40 years, which is why customers look at contractors as, you know, low down dirty contractors, and you know, they're just, that's just the AC guy, you know. He's probably going to take me for $300 today, and you know, all that stuff. You know, be different, right?
Yeah,
actually, yep. Solve problems in homes, solve comfort problems, solve mm-hmm. health problems, create a happy, healthy home, treat the home as an entire system and not just the system as a system.
It is, and I think it just all goes back, man. It's really us is slowing down and asking the right questions. How do we sell a dehumidifier with fresh air, you know, IQ air filtration, these big things? How do you do this? First of all, again, it's drawing that little ounce of pain that they have, listening to them. And before you start throwing about the mouth and saying, I'm going to sell this, this, and this, just really listen to what your client wants to buy.
Yeah. People buy from people they like, right? Mm-hmm. If you come across as a sales guy, they're going to like you, right? When's the last time you went to a car dealership, right? And they're just like a piranha just following
like
you.
Hawk, right?
Yeah, just ready, dude, to munch on you right away. But think about like last time you went to Best Buy, right?
Yes.
What's the first thing that happens when you walk into Best Buy?
Yep, they go right up to you.
Hey, can I help you find something? Mm-hmm. And your first reaction is like, nah, dude, get bent. Get away from me, right? But
exactly.
and then you go look at whatever it is you're looking at, and 5 minutes in, you're like, hey, can I get some help over here?
Yeah, right? what does this do that?
But the thing about it is that you instigated, I'm looking for help, right? And mm-hmm. ultimately, a homeowner has instigated, hey, look, I'm looking for help by the initial invite out to the home. Mm-hmm. And if you just approach it as a, hey, I'm here to help and educate you instead of just trying to sell you on stuff. Because when I start talking about sealing wall plates and attic spaces and removing all that old rat-infested insulation and adding new insulation after we seal top plates, they're like, nobody has talked to me about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so when it's all said and done, it's, again, who do you want to be, you mm-hmm. know? And most guys, again, they just get caught up in the, how many square feet you got? Oh, yeah, that's a 4-ton. Yeah, we can do that for $5,500. It's like, mm-hmm. nah, dude. Not
even
close.
The whole difference process.
Yeah. Minor leagues and major leagues. You know what I mean? So hey, man, I want to ask you, how old are you?
Woo, man. I don't kiss and tell on the first date. No, man. I'm about to be 40 years old.
Okay.
40. I'm 39. I'm clutching. I'm clutching on it. And, guys, I was licensed at 26.
Whew. When's your birthday?
June 30th.
Okay. You're just around the corner.
Yeah.
Well, I'm 38. I'll be 39 in January, dude. So I'm hot on your heels,
you're
baby.
Hot on the heels. Well, so, man, we're learning stronger. Be stronger every day, man.
That's it, man.
Definitely glad we hooked up.
What's your biggest fear, man, in this trade?
My biggest fear, honestly, is, you know, I think it's now I'm starting to really understand how to talk. But my biggest fear was new construction, guys. I honestly feel new construction, not working for the customer, the client, but working for the GC. And it's everybody's like, what? That's all of our jobs, you know? But that is one of the biggest fears in the market because we have no control. So my fear when I do a new construction job and it's not a design build, not it's a spec build, that comes with so much warranty with it. So my biggest fear, I guess, is warranties.
I hear that. So I have like two jobs here in the Austin area that I really wish I never would have taken.
Mm-hmm.
And both of which were new construction. And one of which I think you even went back and got hired by like an energy auditor or something to go back and look at some stuff. And
yeah,
the builder basically handicapped us or handcuffed us to such an extent where we kept saying, that's not going to work. It doesn't work that way. And we'll just figure it out. And it's like, it doesn't work that way. And it was my fault because at that point I should have walked away from the job and just said, look, we're not going to do this, you know? But by me continuing to be bullied by the builder, I just kept pressing forward to try to get the job complete. And in the end, man, who's left holding the bag?
Yep. You know what I mean? It's us. And then, I guess it is a scary topic, you know, and it just like I've had these two, we all, I think, have this dark clouds on us sometimes when we get bullied into the situation. And when I started learning how to talk, where I was kind of afraid to offend the builder and thinking I would get more work later for some, I don't know, weird reason. But now I straighten up builders' backbones really quick. It's more easier to fire a builder now by asking questions than it is to just, you know, accept it. And I usually start, one of my first questions is, how do you want me to be with this job? Do you want me to treat it like a one-night stand? Am I dating you? You know? Or am I going to be married to this job? And, you know, when I'm married to a job, man, bro, I don't care. I'm going to make sure I get that extended warranty. I'm going to protect the whole house. I'm going to meet the client. I'm going to love them. I'm going to treat them. You see me at the grocery store, you come up, you say hello. If it wasn't COVID, we'll be hugging and drinking beers. You know, that's how I married a job. But there's so many jobs I accidentally fall into a marriage that I had to get a divorce on.
Right.
Because I had no control to accept the kind of person or client or house, or I had no control over nothing. And that is a scary thing, guys. You know, in new construction, dealing with just the GC and them throwing the client, picking the client's goals, picking what the client wants, that's a dangerous game.
Yep.
Dangerous game.
Well, it was just last week we finalized a bid on a remodel job, and they sent me an email. And this was right before we closed the deal. They sent me an email and they said, hey, you know, we don't think there's a lot of room in this attic space. Can you come down and just take a look at this? And I was like, take a look at it. They're like, yeah, all the framing's already done. Mm-hmm. So I go down and I look at this job and, you know, the contractor's a little late. They show up and I was like, look, I'm not trying to offend anybody when I say this, but is this the first time that you're thinking about HVAC for this house? Because there's no space for anything.
Nothing.
You know, these cathedral type ceilings, and you know, there's no space to get ductwork in and this and that. And they're like, well, you know, I go, dude, you can come up with all the excuses you want. You did
nice
not
when they put slot diffusers in that.
Yeah. You did not think about this job of HVAC at all until mm-hmm. after the fact. Like, well, how are we going to get duct in here? Oh, I didn't think about that. You know,
I got an easy solution. I just tell them, just, you don't need AC.
You know, so I'm thumbing through all these plans. They got electrical plans. They got plumbing plans. They got, you know, ceiling fan plans. They got all this stuff. And it was like, so where's your mechanical plan?
Oh, yeah.
Well, don't you guys do that?
And guys, that's crazy because we got to be, I never understood this when an old school guy told me, he goes, John, you got to be an engineer, a mathematician, a physicist, a physics major, an architect, an engineer. And I'm like, no, I don't do that. I just do AC. You know what, guys? You're all that.
Yep.
You're all that.
And a plumber and an electrician and a landscaper.
And it's crazy. I feel like, and I might be wrong, just call me out if I am, but I feel like my area is the only place that when I talk to people on Instagram and Facebook, they're like, oh, yeah, we get mechanical plants. And I'm like, y'all do? Wow, where's that at?
No, man. In Arizona, when I moved here from Arizona, and in Arizona, when they're building a house, there is a mechanical plant stamped with, tells you the tonnage that you need, the brand that it's going in, yeah. Like all this tells you the brand of registers that are going in. I moved to Texas, and people start approaching me with sets of plans. And I was like, where's your mechanical plan? Oh, we don't have one. That's what usually what the HVAC guy does. And I was like, what world do you guys live in?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and yeah. I always wondered I didn't have the price. And I think I've been getting their price to them, but I understand it's probably about $3 to $4 a square foot to get those mechanical plans. And I've been doing designs for about, I think I'm going on my fifth year. I'm pretty confident at a lot of designs I'm doing. And I barely started getting a couple thousand for my designs, and people are like, wow. And then builders are like, you're crazy. But honestly, it's more than even drawing the duck. It goes back to what I said in the beginning, guys, asking questions. And I'll share with y'all, you know, I have a job going on right now, 4,000 square foot home, $40,000, an air conditioning job, one variable capacity, one mini split, well job. Now, I sent off the questionnaire, what kind of filtration you want, what kind of how humidity control you want, what kind of fresh air you want, everything. I got a whole nice Excel sheet. I looked on there. They haven't looked at it yet. And I get a call that says, hey, John, I need you to come walk the job and tell us how far the trusses need to be with framing. And I'm looking. I'm like, dude, did y'all hire me for the job? Because I haven't even wrote a contract. Oh, no, just come out here and tell us what to do. Ding, ding, ding. Now my tail doesn't wag for a job. My tail now wags if they're getting unpaid consulting out of me because I don't got that job yet. The check ain't in my hand. And a lot of people use us, especially the good guys, to go pass all our ideals off to the cheapest or sometimes unlicensed contractor. You know, goes on. We decided to do 3D plans for them. Still no money coming in. So finally I just said, you know what? I don't think this guy is going to be a good client for us. One, takes forever to pay. That's the other thing with new construction. Yeah. I don't know how many people fight. And I straighten with their backbone by before we even start the job. Hey, are y'all going to have a problem with me getting paid my full? I want to be 100% complete at startup. Everybody says, okay, guess what, guys? I'm still waiting for the finals. I already passed the finals. We're still waiting on the check because of the bank. You know, so a lot of these problems HVAC industry deals with, we're like the stepchild. Put him over there. He'll be okay. We'll pay him later.
Right.
You know, but want the AC right away.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I think the mindset, too, is that all these HVAC guys make way too much money.
Oh.
Yeah, let me tell you, I'm not driving a sports car, you know?
It's funny, you know, and you said that too. I went to a class one time and they told me how much air conditioning cost back when the guys got out of World War II. I think it was somewhere like around $5,000. That was a typical car, you know, in those days, $2,500, $5,000. And I believe they used to weigh out tonnage $1,000 per ton. So I think most of the homes were about 1,200, 1,500 square feet. It used to be a 2.5 ton unit. If we think about everything involved, cars are easy $30,000.
Not today.
Yeah. What do you
not
think?
Today.
I need to raise my price.
70 G's, dog.
I need to raise my price, guys.
70 G's, man. Yeah, you go buy a nice car. Look at a Tesla. You're going to spend $100,000 on a Tesla.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what I love when people go, oh, you know how much gas I'm going to save driving this Tesla? And I go, you know how much gas you can buy with 90 G's? That's a lot of fuel, bro.
That's a lot of fuel.
Yeah, no, you go buy any like, nice vehicle, like a luxury type vehicle, right? So you go buy a brand new Denali Yukon, right? You're going to spend $80,000-$90,000.
Yes.
You go buy look at the brand new Corvette that just rolled out. Mm-hmm. Beautiful ride. Pretty affordable at like $58,000 as a base model, right?
Yeah.
For brand new Corvette, that's pretty affordable.
But, it's like our premium and two-stage kind of.
Yep. And I just watched this video. This guy bought a $58,000 brand new Corvette and put a ton of add-ons onto it. He ended up walking out of there with like $109,000 or something mm-hmm. like that. Crazy, dude. Like just the cost of vehicles today, right?
Yeah, what about a basic one? Give me a bit. What's like a Malibu?
$30,000?
$30,000.
$40,000?
And new construction.
I mean, that's basic, right?
scraping for 20 G's on a new construction job, you know, for a base.
Right? Yeah.
You know, hopefully that.
If I bid a new construction job, which I try to stay away from, usually the contractor comes back and goes, oh, this other guy bid it for half of that.
Yeah.
You know, why are you so expensive? And I go, dude, good luck, dude.
Good luck. It's a lot of hassles come with it.
So, I got better things to do with my time.
I just think a lot of it is, guys, what's scary with me and Ben both said is new construction. Control that from the beginning. Big ducks are first. Big pipes are first. What I mean, you know, try to meet that client. If you're going to do a design build, you know, meet that client. If you're doing a spec build, good luck. Understand, hey, that comes with things, and you're married to it. So if you got a hot, uncomfortable bedroom, you might be going back out for free. Or you just ruin your reputation a little by telling them, no, go, you know, screw themselves and you don't do the air balance. But, you know, that's our reputation is really what holds us to these jobs. A lot of us don't like burning it.
Well, I think, you know, your reputation, I mean, you are your reputation, right?
Yeah.
And so, or your work is your reputation. And so you have to protect your reputation by simply doing good work. And if you feel like the job is not a good fit for you, then, dude, just don't take it.
Don't
do yourself the injustice of bidding it high because you still might get the job.
That's fun. You just go,
You're like, well, I really don't want this job. So how do I get rid of it now that I have it?
Well, hopefully you put enough in it to sub it out, man.
Dude, some jobs, you know, that just happened to me a couple weeks ago. I'm out in Jonestown. We bid a job out there, and the lady was just, dude, she's next level freaking, she's next level bad shit, dude.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, we're not going to bid your job. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you know it, dude, she called me, and she's like, well, why? Why don't you want? I was like, oh, my God, here we go.
Here we go.
I just told her, dude. I just said, hey, I'm going to speak candid with you. She said, okay, and I just went for it.
I always say you got to pay for it. You got to pay for a basket case house or a basket case customer. They going to pay.
That's it, man. So with that, that's a great segue. I got a question for you here.
Sure.
Is do you have clients that you wish you could fire?
Yeah, I do. I just talked about one, but I had, let me think. There's so many. I just came flashing on me. All right. I have a lady that I had a client. The call was for smells. And the other two contractors left her with a sour taste in her mouth, guys, because, again, they didn't ask questions. And the other thing is they said she's crazy. I don't smell nothing. You know what I say about sales? It's a theatrical play played by a psychiatrist. So it's all about acting, okay? And I didn't steal that. I was from Sandler. But what I ended up learning, this was one of my first jobs under HVAC 2.0, is I just sat there and asked. Ask questions. Oh, really? It smells. I felt some faint. But I said, how do I make whatever your complaint is a number? Again, I want to test instead of guess. I was able to have her agree to a particular test and compare that to smells. So now instead of what everybody else was fearing, smells on a back crazy lady, now I can actually give you a number. And so it had 500,000 particles in the house. We got it down to 30,000, and guess what? Smells went away. Before I was doing the interviewing process, before we accepted the job, I looked at this carpet, and I was like, hey, you know, carpet holds a lot of dust, right? Oh, it ain't the carpet. It's been cleaned. Are you sure? You sure you don't want me to test it? And test it, guys. Hit it on the ground. Get a particle tester. If it goes up into like the millions.
Which doesn't matter if you clean it or not. It's still going to do
it. It's still going to be bad. You know, especially, but guess what, guys? She did the job. Spent a good amount of money with us. Week later, calls me freaking out, cussing me out, everything. Her husband's going to be mad. Calm down, let me see what I call her. Let's call her the Miss Lady, okay? I calmed her down. And then I said, hey, well, let's go over there. I hit the carpet. Ended up, all the dust particles came out free of responsibility. She ended up getting all her carpets replaced. Smell went away. So
imagine that.
It was it's got to get basket case people in the way and get a one step ahead of them. Put all that unknown mystification into numbers and judge it by that. Hey, if you're playing a baseball game, you got to know what a ball is, a foul, or a ball is a home run. Which side of the fence is it? Set those rules up front. Understand upfront contracts, and that will help you with your offer and declines.
Interesting. what's your favorite brand of equipment?
Well, I am not brand specific. I'm a York dealer. I love them, and it's not because of brand. It's because of how my supply house takes care of me. To me, guys, supply houses are our allies. They're big. They're awesome to us. And I try to stick with one, and I try to build a relationship with them. But besides that, so it's York. I love Lennox. I love Trane. I love Carrier with their reheat. That is some amazing, amazing technology.
That's in the green speed, right?
Yes, yes. That allows dehumidifying at a much, very better rate. Sometimes you don't even need to get a whole house dehu to control humidity. I love Mitsubishi. You know, it's a great, great tool to use if you're trying to handle people's goals with better control on their temperature, you know. But make sure your air leakage, your house is tight, because right. If it's leaky, you're going to have some problems.
We just actually got a set of plans for a job. It's like a $9 million renovation going down.
Nice.
And the Mitsubishi job that's specced out for this will probably be somewhere around $150,000, $200,000.
Yeah, especially that city multi. Oh, that's up there.
It's incredible, man. Yeah, just the equipment cost alone, I was like.
Straighten up your backbone real quick.
It's like, holy crap, dude.
I love that. I love straightening out backbones real quick.
But if we end up getting that, I'm waiting to hear back from the builder or from the contractor, but if we end up getting that job, man, I probably need some help and somebody who knows Mitsubishi really well. So
yeah, really a big thing is, and guys, I'm, you know, over here in Austin, when I learned how to run line sets, I'm a residential guy. I don't swing with commercial guys a lot, but Mitsubishi, the key thing is pipe fitting. You gotta have some really clean pipe, and don't stretch your max lengths. You know, that's the piping, the pressure testing, that's one of the key things. Also, never ever cut that wire, the communication wire. You run it extra long, because if you have any cuts in it, you will get some signal errors.
What if you could leave, if you could change your job in this trade, what would you go do? Still staying in the trade, just doing something different.
Oh, man. If I was doing that, I would actually focus more on more problem-orientated jobs where other people kind of step away from. I really like a challenge, and that would be into the whole part of testing. I love the blower doors. I love load calculations. I love doing the 3D modeling and energy usage, and really hone that in of all the HVAC diagnostics to understand a good planning process for a client. I really like that part of it. And then watching everything go together. You know, it's a lot of moving parts when you're doing HVAC and home performance. You got to deal with the insulation contractor, air sealing contractor, foam contractor, ductwork, AC, ventilation, exhaust. So there's so many moving parts. But if you line them up with a good planning process, you can monitor it by testing. And to see the client's face, just you could see the relief. It's not like selling a unit. You're like, hey, great, you feel that cold air coming out? It's great. You can actually see when they spend that money, just a sense of gratitude that they spent it right. No buyer's remorse. You know, that's a good, but back in there, but pretty much be testing and design.
Gotcha.
Straight up, but short answer, nutshell.
It's all good. Do you think that it's easy with today's technology to start an HVAC business?
Good question, man. A very good question. I think, honestly, it's easy to start an HVAC business, but to understand an HVAC business is where you're at. Guys, you know, I did it such the wrong way. I'm a technician by heart. I didn't understand business, and I started a business. You know, went around, got a DBA, got a truck, started rolling.
And I guess that would be similar to being a technician. No, it'd be very similar to being a business guy. And then you go in and get in a van and jumping in with a set of hand tools and going to diagnose equipment. You're just
yes.
Where do I start, right?
It was hard. It's like I feel being a business owner, understanding business, there's a certain drive you got to have, and it's a whole trade on its own, you know. And a lot of us really focus on, hey, I just want to, you know, fix units, get paid good for it, and just start going along. But when it, once you start, you're hitting a cap. Everything changes when you start going into really understanding business and you really understand your finances. To understand that lady, Miss Betty, you've been taking care of, and all her cousins, all her friends, is actually costing you a lot of money. It ain't really doing you well. Or the new construction jobs you're taking being the cheapest price. Actually, if you look at that money and you really look at it, it's like you wrote all the builders you have checks of $1,000 each. That's what I faced. I'm like, wow, I thought I really loved new construction. I was busy every day.
Yeah, when it's all said and done, you can lose your shirt in this business super fast.
So if anyone is doing that, look, it's a great business to get in. If you're not scared to get out, if you're not scared to work with your hands, if you got a drive, if you're pushing yourself to the drive, you're pushing yourself of how to sell even tech jobs, you know, that's great. You can understand it, but you got to understand the business.
Yeah, and I think that anybody who decides that they want to get in this trade, and, you know, obviously you need to learn the ropes before you can start a business. But while you're learning the trade, also you should be talking to your supervisors and your boss and, mm-hmm. you know, your higher-ups, wherever you're working, and asking questions, man. Not for the fact that you're planning on leaving to go start your own business, but because you have genuine curiosity and that you want to learn. Because in this business, the most successful businesses in this trade are not run by HVAC guys. They're run by business guys, white collar business guys who just know business. And quite frankly, they don't need to know anything about HVAC. They have other guys on staff that know about HVAC, right? And that's a typical move of a really successful business guy.
Yes.
And I think that's where we really fail, is that we are fantastic installers and we're fantastic technicians, right? We're great with people, but where we fail is we fail to learn the business side, which is really where the rubber meets the road.
Yes.
If you want to make money and if you want to, you know, take your family on vacations and you want to buy that truck, that fancy four-wheel drive truck that you want, you know, or that really nice, you know, loaded up van or whatever, you know, think about it. A lot of guys, they're like, man, it costs $3,000 to $5,000 to wrap a Sprinter van.
Oh yeah.
They're like, I don't have $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000.
And your insurance going up too, because you can't now hide your insurance. I learned that. I did a lot of tricks in the book to try it, all the wrong ways to lead me to the road of each day I'm taking that step to get it right.
Yeah, man. You know? So, yeah, it's definitely a learning process. And I think, you know, in order to try to truly be great at what you do, it's a very intentional thing. It doesn't just happen by accident. I mean, you have to try. And, you know, you just try to be better every day. You try to keep learning and just try to master your craft. And part of that craft in this business is the business.
Yeah, learning how to charge, because that killed me. It killed me off of what a lot of us do is just wing it. You know, hey, I saw this price book, and I think I should be charging that too. And really not understanding what costs you maybe 27% overhead to run your business. You're charging 26%. No wonder why you ain't bought the new truck. You know, or you're constantly charging 27% overhead and wondering, hey, if I take these new construction jobs, that's all I'm making, I won't get that new truck. I'm going to have to lease another one. And that was a tough, tough pill to swallow to me and my family, because I thought, hey, I'm getting paid, but I really wasn't getting paid. You know, so now with processes are letting me know, hey, this is what we need to be at. And if I take this job, I already know I'm losing.
Right.
You know. So those are good things. So business is definitely understanding your overhead is going to be a big, big part of it.
For sure, man. Cool. Well, we'll start wrapping up. Is there anything that you want to leave the audience with?
The one thing that I could say, guys, is an amateur doesn't know why or doesn't know when he's doing something. Learn how to be a professional at your craft. Know why you're doing something and when you're doing something. That's going to be the best thing to help you move forward. Other than that, guys, man, thank you. Thank y'all for letting me be here and share my story with you.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I always say that a lot of guys in our trade who proclaim to be professionals and experts at what they do are not professionals and experts at what they do. Yeah. And I was one of them.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah.
So,
well, we always try to start somewhere. And the guys, you know, each one, there's always a step. There's always someone that can help. And supervisors, guys, help your things. We're all going to build up like a family so we can all charge the right way and we can all move up together. It's every little link of the chain needs to link up. Supervisors teach the youngins, get the drives. Don't be hiding at no job sites.
There you go. Well, guys, that's John Escoval, Army veteran, student of the HVAC 2.0 program, lover of the trade, and lover of HVAC Tactical. So thanks for coming on the show. Be sure to check him out on Instagram at Austin Star Services. That's on Instagram, Austin Star Services. And hit him up with questions. Ask him technical questions. See if he can help you, lead you in the right direction, and get you hooked up with the HVAC 2.0 program. And maybe we can chat with your buddy over at HVAC 2.0.
Oh, yeah, and they'll love it, man. And, Nate Adams, Ted Kidd, woof. Yeah. Y'all ready to get y'all's mind blow away? Watch it.
Yeah, we'll have to do something live where people can throw in some questions and stuff. But, yeah, we'll check it out. So thanks so much for coming down, man. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
So, all right, we'll see you guys soon.
Decision to be the best. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Your work reflects you, so protect your reputation. Don't ever give up. HVAC.